Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 11th, 2014. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says there is no more time to waste. The two warring parties must find a peaceful solution.
These so-called protection of civilian sites on unmissed bases were always envisioned as temporary solutions to protect civilians in imminent danger of physical violence. It was not and is not supposed to become permanent settlement.
And Ugandans protest the killing of their nationals in a Boer marketplace.
It is very sorry. Lord Mayor, yesterday we were with you. Two people had died. Night yesterday, another one passed away. So far we have three bodies and one injury.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The United Nations Special Representative and Head of the Mission in South Sudan, Ellen Margaret Loy, has used the one-year anniversary of the nation's conflict to urge warring parties to speed up their commitment to the peace process. Loy cautioned that UN bases hosting tens of thousands of internally displaced persons or IDPs must not be considered permanent homes. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Loy says that when she agreed to lead the UN peacekeeping mission amid the enormous suffering endured by the people of South Sudan, she knew the challenges awaiting her. She says the decision to provide shelter for hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese fleeing violence will go down in the history of UN peacekeeping missions as a huge success. But
it's also important to remember that these so-called protection of civilian sites on unmissed bases were always envisioned as temporary solutions to protect civilians in imminent danger of physical violence. It was not and is not supposed to become permanent settlement. Therefore, we need to focus more on fostering a safe and secure environment outside the UN camps.
That means enabling IDPs to leave the camps and start new lives without fear of being attacked. Loy says the UNMISS protection of civilian side in the Lagos State's capital Rumbek closed this month after the displaced people living there found a separate area to settle. Loy says similar arrangements are being made in Juba. She says the UN will help ensure that civilians are protected even after they leave UNMISS bases, but that responsibility lies with others.
We should never forget that the ultimate responsibility for protection of civilians remains with the government, including its national security forces, the SPLA, and the South Sudan National Police Service. It is first and foremost their responsibility to provide security to the citizens of their country.
As of this week, nearly 100,000 civilians remain at UNMISS POC sites around South Sudan. Another 1.5 million people are displaced inside South Sudan, and 750 others have fled across the borders to neighboring countries. The one-year-old conflict has led to the deaths of at least 10,000 people, according to the UN. Efforts by mediators from the regional bloc, IGAD, to end the conflict between the two warring parties are due to resume next week. Last month, the peace talks were postponed to allow for consultative meetings. Also, in November, the UN Security Council renewed the UNMISS mandate with a particular focus on the protection of civilians. Loy says UN member states were sending the leaders of the government and rebels a clear message.
The patience of the international community with both parties is wearing thin, and their leaders must inject a new sense of urgency into the peace process in order to reach a comprehensive peace agreement as soon as possible. We sincerely hope that representatives of both parties at the IGAD-sponsored peace talks will return to the negotiation table with a heightened sense of responsibility and openness to compromise. And hopefully that can bring the talks to a swift and successful conclusion.
Loy says UNMISS officials will continue to monitor and report on human rights violations.
A legacy of impunity for serious human rights violations in the past has contributed to the current crisis. This legacy must stop and stop now.
Experts say South Sudan faces crippling institutional weaknesses that impede progress. Human rights advocacy groups have documented numerous abuses, including targeted killings, detention, and forced disappearance seen last December, and they continue their calls for justice and accountability. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
There was another tragic accident on the main road linking South Sudan to Uganda today. The three people were died and 20 others were rushed to Nimulo Hospital this morning after a lorry collided with bus on a Numuli road. Mugume Davis Rwakaring was there and filed us this report.
The accident occurred about 10 o'clock this morning when a cargo truck carrying luggage to Juba crashed into a passenger bus traveling to Uganda. The crash occurred in the middle of the Aso Bridge, some 20 kilometers from the Nimule border. Nimule police officer Amdot Belias Francis, who rushed to the scene, blames excessive speed and the truck driver for driving on the wrong side of the road for causing today's deadly accident.
Vehicle number KBK172J collided with the bus at Ashwa Bridge, where some injuries realized and a person died in the accident. The cause of the accident is the other vehicle is using the other side, and I'm seeing is like over-speeding that they could not control themselves.
One person died at the scene. Two others died after being admitted to the hospital. Authorities say all too often, drivers from Uganda, where traffic laws are different than South Sudanese, are traveling on the left-hand side of the road. In South Sudan, drivers travel on the right-hand side. Bibian Alex, who works for the Minister of Health, was traveling to Uganda to attend to her sick child in one of Uganda's hospitals. She feels lucky to have survived with only minor injuries. She says she knew something bad would happen from the high rate of speed the bus driver was driving.
The big truck was like just in the middle of the bridge and it's hooting. Meanwhile, this bus, our bus, it's also going. The other one wants to go left and the other one wants to go right. So they lose control and then they crash. I was screaming, oh my God, and I stood up on my chair. I hold the chair in front of me. I was screaming. By then, I had my laptop on my lap and just fall down and I was just screaming, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, oh Jesus.
Mark Mabir, who works in the printing and stationery supply business in Juba, was traveling from Kampala to buy some materials for his clients. He is among hundreds of commuters held up on the Nimule Juba road after the fatal accident.
I supposed to report to my work today afternoon. I have something to present to my boss tomorrow morning. And this thing may pile up in my file as part of my failure. Today we were having a project to design and deliver an invitation card for a certain wedding. Now it will be a very big inconvenience to our clients. We promised them by today afternoon or in the evening we will deliver everything. By now, I think it is impossible.
Mabir thinks more policemen should be deployed along this dangerous stretch of the Nimule Juba Road to ensure that drivers follow the rules. He says it would help if the fines were increased for speeding.
They are mostly given fine receipt, just minor fine. That's why the drivers are not taking care of it. We normally give them a fine of £30, maybe £30, or if not, maybe two receipts, because each receipt is given at £30.
He says tougher punishments would send the right message to reckless drivers. As a heavy tractor trailer struggles to remove the truck stuck in the middle of the road, hundreds of commuters wait to get back on the road and onto their destinations. Many have been stranded for hours. Rebecca Ayuen is traveling from Kampala, where her three children attend school.
There is no water, there is no everything. We are very tired here. So we didn't know what we are going to do. Yeah, even the children, they are also like that. Even some, they are sleeping at the car there. They can get sick because the child cannot be staying and seen yesterday.
Julia Caesar Barilene, a driver with Bakul Coach, says these types of accidents are too familiar.
It affects us because business goes down, passengers get scared. Yeah, because now people get scared and they cannot turn up as usual.
He says his company has lost over 50% of its revenues since they had a major accident about 3 months ago, killing over 50 passengers on board. Hundreds of people have lost their lives along the Juba-Nimle Road since it was opened in 2009. For VOA News, I am Mugumedev Surakarinj, Aswa River Bridge, Eastern Equatoria State.
Members of the Ugandan community in Jonglei State held a peaceful demonstration in Bor today to protest the killing of three Ugandans by a policeman. The three were shot and killed late yesterday afternoon in Marol Market. Two other people were wounded in the shooting. As Jacob Achek reports from Bor, state officials have condemned the incident.
Hundreds of Ugandan businessmen gathered outside Bor City Council to call on the Jonglei State Government to provide security to them following Wednesday's violence. The mayor of Bor, Nial Majak Nial, said his council will do what it can to help all of the town residents live in peace and security.
This incident is the third incident in 2 months in Bor. As you have heard of the incident that resulted to the death of an Ethiopian woman, and also there was another incident after that, two South Sudanese were shot at night. I think all of you have heard this. In the same area, yesterday, this heinous crime was committed by one of us. And as a government, we condemn this thing with the strongest term possible.
Nial recalled that Bor was once of the safe town in South Sudan, but acts of violence, including murder, have increased significantly since the nation plunged into conflict last December. Nial promised that the municipality council, with help from Jonglei State government officials, will strengthen security in the town. Jonglei State Ugandan community advisor Joku Godfrey says yesterday's incident was unusual for Bor.
It's a very sad news which happened yesterday. We were not expecting it, but it happened. It is very sorry. Lord Mayor, yesterday we were with you. Two people had died night yesterday. Another one passed away. So far we have three bodies and one injured.
Peter Deng witnessed the deadly shooting. He said a man in police uniform walked up and began shooting at people in the market.
We were playing together in that particular place with those Ugandan men. We were playing on that side and we were playing on this side. And that officer came behind us, passed between those two pens. And when he came in there, he started by opening fire against those Ugandan. And when we saw that, we saw people falling down and we started running. And when he saw us running, they also shot at us.
Deng said it appears that the shooter was not targeting Ugandan nationals, but was shooting randomly at anyone who happened to be in the market. Deng also sustained minor injuries. He says he was able to find a holding place and stayed there until he felt it was safety to come out again. He said he did not recognize the shooter. Deng said Jonglei State Police should step up patrol in Bor to help reduce crime. He said the local government should do a better job of screening prospective police and army employees from mental disabilities. Bor County Commissioner Mame Rook says the unfortunate incident should not be allowed to mar the good relationship that South Sudans and Ugandan have enjoyed for decades. He blamed the killer on rebel fighting the government of President Salva Kiir.
The incident was from one person. It is not for all community of Bor. And the one who commits such crime will be brought to law. And this is the end of crime in Bor. Because such elements that are not belong to the government of South Sudan, they are allies to the rebel of Riek Machar.
Godfrey said Ugandan community is in the process of transporting the bodies of the deceased back to Uganda for burials. According to the tradition, he said officials in Mayor Nial's office are promised to work with state authorities to speed up the repatriation process, which had been stalled by logistical problem. It did not go into detail about the nature of the problem. 2 months ago, an Eritrean was killed in Langbar neighborhood of Bor. A week later, two South Sudanese nationals were killed in the same district. No one has been arrested for those killings. The policeman who alleged shoot and killed the Ugandan is in police custody. His identity had not been made public. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Bor.
VOA Africa presents a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control.
Many Ebola patients who are treated in hospital will survive and recover. Ebola is a serious disease, but when people have recovered, the doctors test them, and when the disease is all gone, they are discharged. The discharged patients cannot transmit Ebola. The virus has left their bodies, and they cannot pass Ebola to anyone, not their children, their other family members, people sitting next to them in the taxi or bus. Partners, however, must abstain or always use a condom for sex for 3 months after discharge from the health center. And remember, with the right information and together with our healthcare workers, we can protect ourselves from Ebola.
That was a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, brought to you by VOA Africa.
The South Sudanese are a very proud people, but they're a very spiritual people.
That's Susan Page, the United States' first ambassador to South Sudan. She was in Juba last year when violence broke out in the capital. Next week, we have a three-part interview with Ambassador Page in which she reflects on what led to the crisis and recalling her 3 years in Juba.
You can forgive by being able to have some sort of understanding about what happened and be able to move forward and not hold that against the entire nation for what maybe an individual has done, but to think about the best interests of the country.
Don't miss our interview with former U.S. Ambassador Susan Page next week on South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what family member are you closest to and why?
I'm close to my young sister who was born after me. Yeah. Why? Because I think we have grown up together. We have been close all the way from primary up to secondary level. And we are also like close in terms of our ages, so we understand each other well.
I'm close to my brothers and because I like them, and we can keep our secret between us as children. Huh? We can keep our secret down here to our level.
I don't really have family members that are so close to me because I stay alone, and most of the time just talk on phone. And actually, the people who are very close to me are my employees at the workplace.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. At a United Nations and SAD Institute-sponsored debate entitled South Sudan's Peace Process and the Role of Regional and International Actors, at least one analyst believes a people-centered constitution is the only solution for the nation's challenges and that the ongoing peace talks will not solve South Sudan's problem. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
SUD Institute policy analyst Zakaria Ding Akol says the country's transitional constitution should be scrapped in favor of a brand new constitution that puts the people first.
While the need to end the conflict is of utmost importance, it is equally imperative that we are extremely seized the urgency of designing a better future in our country. This means that the journey needs to start with designing a well-considered constitution which will be instrumental in helping us to manage our affairs and challenges in a better way.
Before the crisis began a year ago, the government established the National Constitution Review Commission to work out a permanent constitution for South Sudan that would replace the transitional one. But a permanent constitution was never written. Akol says part of the reason is the commission was doomed to begin with.
Some of them are heads of commissions, some of them are in the assembly, some of them are leaders of various political parties, some of them are functioning in other institutions in different capacities. And so to give them this work, because they are competing, or there might be competing priorities for them, majority of these people are busy in other positions. This undermines the work of the commission.
Akol also says the transitional constitution has a number of loopholes that fail to address the nation's problems. For example, he says the right of different states to enact different laws often contradict national policy and therefore dilute the constitution. Akol also says the transitional constitution gives too much power to the executive branch, which hampers transparency, accountability, and rule of law in the country. He says a new constitution should be drafted, one that includes the beliefs of ordinary citizens.
There may be a need to revisit the composition of the NCRC. And among the things that we need to consider is maybe forming a small-sized committee of experts whose sole purposes are, one, to engage the public in order to foster a better understanding as to the relevance of the Constitution, and two, to draft the text of the Constitution.
Lawyer Lawrence Korbandi, who chairs the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, agrees.
The problem that we have in our Constitution is not a Constitution that unites us. It's a Constitution that divides us. That is why you will find voices talking about powers given to somebody or powers are given to individuals or elites are the ones governing the country.
But for Peter Lamboth, the former chairperson of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, the crisis in South Sudan is not the result of poorly written constitution.
The constitution may not be perfect, but it is us to implement what is there and to amend what is not for us. It is about constitutionalism and the implementation of it.
Lam says people of different ethnicities must learn how to peacefully coexist. The crisis began a year ago over a political disagreement between President Salva Kiir and his then Vice President Riek Machar. Deadly violence quickly spread across the country, most of it along ethnic lines. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
Next Monday marks 1 year since South Sudan's conflict started. In a run-up to the one-year anniversary of the start of the fighting, South Sudan in Focus is airing a series of stories on how the unrest has affected the lives of ordinary people. Today, we look at 1 year of the key effort to resolve the crisis, the creation of the transitional government of the national unity. The warring sides in South Sudan have agreed on a board markup for the transitional government, but have yet to hammer out the final details. In an expert at the Washington, D.C.-based United States Institute for Peace, or USIP, says that to make a transitional government a success, the people have to be involved in its creation. Manal Omar is a deputy vice president for the Middle East and Africa Center at USIP. She says creating a transitional government is equivalent to drafting a new social contract between the people and their government.
Before you're able to do that, you need someone who's a caretaker to be able to really facilitate that social contract and that transition.
Omar has extensive experience in the Middle East. She worked with the non-governmental organization Women for Women International as the regional coordinator for Afghanistan, Iraq, and Sudan. She also served as an international advisor for Libya stabilization team in Benghazi in 2011. She says that during the transitional period, there has to be a real community involvement and a dialogue between officials and ordinary citizens. That way, citizens will understand how the government works and will be able to evaluate its performance.
My experience is that if you actually have that dialogue and that conversation with communities, they're much more patient. A lot of the times where you'll feel communities start really pushing back is when they are not aware of the process and when you are just holding elections and people are stepping into place and they're not really clear on what the final deliverable will be or what's the actual mandate of the transitional government.
She says many have high hopes that a transitional government will change their lives. Omar says someone has to make sure that the different parties in the transitional government carry through with their promises.
I think that mediators can really play the role of holding people to the promises that are made. I mean, oftentimes the different parties may have made an agreement, but it doesn't mean that the trust is still there. I mean, the trust building effort, again, will take a long period of time and will take actual experiential exchange between the groups. And so the third person mediator is very important in being able to be the person who holds the trust and holds that space between the different political parties.
In late August, negotiators from President Salva Kiir's administration agreed to allow the rebels to choose a prime minister, but the details of the arrangement and other aspects of the transitional government have yet to be worked out. Earlier this month, South Sudanese Information Minister Michael Makuei dismissed a group that President Kiir should share power with opposition leader Riek Machar in a transitional government. In a news conference in Washington last week, Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin said the government has made numerous concessions, including the creation of the position of the prime minister, to Machar's side in a bid to restore peace in South Sudan. He said an interim constitution of South Sudan rules out one of the rebels' requests about the primership, that it to be an executive position with powers similar to those of the president.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. At least one person is dead after a suicide bomber attacked a musical performance at the French Cultural Center in Kabul today, just hours after an explosion killed six soldiers on the outskirts of the Afghan capital. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the deadly bombing of a bus carrying Afghan troops earlier today. Dozens of people were injured. Palestinians are mourning a cabinet minister who died yesterday after clashes with Israeli police in the West Bank. Thousands of people, including Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, gathered today in Ramallah for the funeral procession of Ziad Abu Ayn. And finally, former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney says the Central Intelligence Agency did exactly what the White House wanted in setting up an interrogation program for terror suspects following the September 11, 2001 attacks. A Senate report says harsh interrogations amounted to torture and went beyond legal limits. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you now with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido. Been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Mama Ama. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you will be back here with us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.